I think the main reason I didn't say anything about it was because of intimidation and just being afraid of him as an individual.
Right. And you was a first lady at this time, right?
I was.
Everyone that don't know the story, they understand that this man that was actually inflicting domestic abuse, he was a pastor.
Yes.
With most abusers, they are supreme manipulators.
Truly.
So they know how to manipulate someone, you know, inflict pain, but then somehow make them feel as their fault.
That is exactly right. One of the reasons I didn't say anything is because my concern was not just for myself and just for my children, but my concern was also for church members trying to cover him.
Wow.
Because I didn't want other people to be affected spiritually by what he was doing to me.
It's the Highest Point Podcast.
More than a pod, it's a lifestyle.
Yo, yo, yo. Welcome to the Highest Point Podcast. This is a podcast for everyone, no matter where you're from, no matter what you've been through. You know you deserve the best and willing to put in the work for progress to reach the highest point. So if you're about that lifestyle, making today better than yesterday, go ahead, hit that subscribe button, hit that notification bell, and become part of the family. We welcome you. But today, people, we have a very, very special guest in the building.
Mm-hmm.
A pastor, you know, an artist, an author, a screenplay writer, a domestic violence abuse survivor and advocate, Miss Marva J. Edwards. How you doing today?
I am doing very well. Thank you.
What's up, Miss Marva?
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well.
Wonderful. So glad to be here today.
Yeah, we're very glad to have you here today as well. And, you know, first I want to get off is, you know, I had the opportunity to see firsthand some of the positivity that you're doing in the community. And I think it's just so dope. That's why I wanted you to be on the show. You know, I had opportunity to attend some of your events called Celebration of Survivors. And with Celebration of Survivors, it brings awareness to domestic violence and abuse. And it really helps people in those situations. Had an opportunity to attend multiple sermons of yours that you conducted, which were very enlightening. I've even seen your wall of art in the Greensboro Art Center downtown, which was amazing. And I think that's dope.
Wow.
And how you are incorporating that in your support groups with like things like art therapy and things like that. And I just think it's all pretty awesome. And we're going to get into the details of all of those things. One thing on our show we like to really, really highlight is the journey of people.
Yeah.
Because when you get to it, what people are seeing right now with you is the end result of a continued evolution of a person. They're seeing that of you right now. But you may not have been that person you are right now always. So we want to get into that journey, like, you know, the ups, the downs, you know, where you're from, what you've been through, because other people need to see that, hey, you know, through pain, there also can be strength.
Yes.
Fellas, have you started spring cleaning yet? The carpets need cleaning, the drapes need dusting, and your lawn needs mowing. Spring has sprung and the global leaders in below-the-waist grooming have the best tools for cleaning aisles 5 in your pants. Time to clear out your winter bush and join over 4 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped by going to manscaped.com for 20% off and free shipping with the code THP. So if you got your bushes trimmed outside, you don't got no business for your bush inside your britches not to be trimmed.
Exactly. And the start of spring, it also starts Testicular Cancer Awareness Month.
Mm.
And Manscaped takes that very seriously because they have a We Save Balls initiative.
Oh, yo, that's so dope. For real, for real. Like, when y'all guys going to the doctor, make sure the doctor fondling your balls too, man.
Got to.
You
got to
make sure you're healthy because this testicular cancer is nothing to play with. We don't want no parts of that. And this year, we are definitely focused on health.
Exactly.
So get 20% off and free shipping with the code THP at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping. So what are you waiting for? Use the code THP at manscaped.com. It's time to throw away your old hygiene habits and upgrade your life, you know? So let's start from the beginning. Can you give us a little insight of where you're from and what type of family dynamics did you grow up in? Like, did you have mom, dad, siblings, anything like that?
Okay, so I am a native of Greensboro, North Carolina, And in terms of my family dynamics, it was just my mom and my six siblings. Oh, wow. And four, period. My aunt, my uncle, mm-hmm. and my aunt's two children, and my grandmother.
Oh, wow. So your aunt and uncle was part of, like, helping support you raising up a little bit?
Well, basically, they're my mother's younger siblings. Oh. So my mother was helping to care for her siblings, mm-hmm. and we all lived together for a number of years. So I am the seventh of seven children.
The youngest, huh?
Yes.
Like me.
Yes.
Oh, we all the youngest in here.
Well, how about that? I didn't know that, Toby.
Yeah, they call it the baby.
Interesting.
The baby boy, the baby girl. Yeah, that's cool.
No matter how old you are. Yeah, right. Baby.
So, you know, getting that, you know, background, you grew up with a big family, single mother situation as well. How did you morph that and get into ministry? And how long ago did you get into ministry?
You know, I didn't really choose to be in ministry. Mm-hmm. I was chosen to be in ministry. Mm. I would have never chosen this for myself. So this is a calling mm-hmm. of God that I pastored. Again, anyone that chooses that assignment, they are venturing into some very unusual territory.
Right.
Mm. You know, that's like choosing something that wasn't intended for you.
Right.
And so you end up in a lot of conflicts because right. you weren't supposed to be there doing that. So, yes, that was a calling for me. And I passed it for right at 20 years.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
So how do you know it was a calling? What was that like epiphany that just got you and you started in ministry?
Well, you have to be able to understand that there is the Holy Spirit, mm-hmm. which was very much at work in me and in my life.
Right.
And it was always that pull, that tug. And this is really a whole nother podcast, mm-hmm. but I resisted for a long time. Mm-hmm. And I began to have some very unusual experiences because I was being disobedient.
Ah.
And you know how it is, if you're disobedient to your parents, then there are consequences. Things start right. happening.
Definitely.
Oh, yeah.
And it sets off a chain of events. And so I set off a chain of events in my own life because I knew that the Lord was calling me into ministry and I just didn't want to do it. I didn't feel qualified. I didn't like being in front of a lot of people.
Right.
Having to say anything. And now, you know, here we are 20 years later. It's just not a
right.
Yeah. I've grown.
Yeah. When I seen you in church, I can't tell you that you had any problem ever with being in front of people because, you know, you just bring people in and very engaging when you speak. So, yeah, just kudos to that. So now, because we you know, you're doing the ministry for over 20 years doing pastoring. So, you know, let's get down into like the nitty gritty, because we know you have a book here, yes. Bound to Be Free. Mm-hmm. And when I look at this book, the cover, it reads Breaking Free from Domestic Violence. So now when you were in the situation of domestic violence, was that during when you was pastoring or prior to?
It was prior to me pastoring. I was in ministry, mm-hmm. but I wasn't pastoring. Mm-hmm. So I was preaching at the time.
Right.
Teaching Sunday school, that kind of thing. But I was not pastoring at the time. Oh, and wow. Only a few people knew that I was experiencing that.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, I did what most people do. I kept it very hidden. Mm-hmm. And if I can go on to say, you know, out of shame. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing that's very common among those who experience domestic abuse, whether right. it's a man or a woman, mm-hmm. Is that shame.
Right.
Got you. So, yeah. So when you say domestic abuse, you're talking about physical?
Yes. I'm glad you asked that.
Yes. Okay. And I'm assuming that you were scared to say something because of the psychological abuse that went along with it.
Yes, and it wasn't just physical or psychological, but it was emotional abuse as well. And I think the main reason I didn't say anything about it was because of intimidation and just being afraid of him as an individual. Right. I was never afraid of, you know, him doing anything to my children or mm-hmm. to my mother or my siblings or anyone like that. because that threat was never out there.
Right.
The threat was towards me.
So what's an example of emotional abuse?
You know, it's just that negative talk, the put downs. That's pretty much it. Just always being negative, making you feel like, you know, you're not worthy and nobody wants you, or demeaning your appearance or the way that you do things.
Right.
You know, you can never do anything right or good enough, which is also very common. Almost every abuser makes his or her victim feel that they can never do anything good enough.
Right. Right. And you was a first lady at this time, right?
I was.
So I think that's something that needs to.
I was.
Everyone that you know, don't know the story, they understand that this man that was actually inflicting domestic abuse, he was a pastor.
Yes.
So, you know, that's a lot to even, you know, ingest there and understand, because, you know, when you say that shame of it, when you're in a position like that in front of so many people and supposed to be an example to other people, how can you admit that this is what you're going through?
That is right.
So I'm sure that probably has something to do with it as well. And then with most abusers, they are supreme manipulators.
Yeah. Truly.
So they know how to manipulate someone, you know, inflict pain, but then somehow make them feel that it's their fault.
That is exactly right.
You know,
that is exactly right.
And and a lot of people got to really pay attention to those things. And if anyone out there being abused, you got to understand it's not your fault.
That's exactly right. And one thing I'd like to say is that in my particular situation, and I'm sure this applies to so many others as well, is that one of the reasons I didn't say anything to more than a handful of people is because my concern was not just for myself and just for my children, but my concern was also for the parishioners.
What are parishioners, for those that don't
church
know?
Members.
Okay.
You know, my concern was for them as well. And it was also my concern was for trying to cover him.
Right.
Trying to cover him.
Wow.
Because I didn't want other people to be affected spiritually by what he was doing to me. Now, there was no way to prevent that.
Right.
In the grand scheme of things. But in my thinking at the time, I was trying to protect them as well as myself and my children.
Right. Right.
And in a situation like that, a lot of times people don't believe you anyway, because everybody wants to believe that the preacher, the pastor is right.
Right. Right. So true.
And probably look at him like he can't do no wrong.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Have him on that pedestal. He got that that title. But at the end of the day, behind that title, it's a person at the end of the day.
Yeah, people are people and they're going to do what regular people do.
That's right. We all falter.
And, you know, even with, you know, we was talking about the children a little bit there. What do you think may have been, did they see anything like him abusing you at all?
Yes, I'm sure that my oldest two did at some point. I don't think my sons did. And if they did, their memory is probably skewed a little bit because they were so young. They were so young.
Yeah.
And I purposed to keep that from them as much as I possibly could. But the reality of that is children always know more than what we think they know.
Yeah.
That's the
they
truth.
Are aware of a lot more than what we give them credit for. And even if they can't hear it or see it, they feel the tension.
Right.
They see the tension.
Yeah.
They see that you're not getting along. They see the eyes and the inflections and the body language.
Yeah. Right.
And maybe they can't articulate it for what it is, but they know that it's not good.
Yeah. Exactly. That vibe.
So what steps did you take into like trying to remove yourself from that situation?
Let me preface by saying that things are very different now than they were in the 90s. And I constantly called the Greensboro Police Department have him removed. I took out a restraining order, no matter how many times he was arrested. This is real. I'd wake up and he'd be standing over me.
What? After you know, calling the police, restraining order?
Yes. He'd get locked up. He'd get out and he'd break into the house. He'd stalk me, hide underneath the house, just all kinds of things.
That is
so
crazy.
There came a point where I was so tired and I had just been praying and praying and praying. And people who are spiritual and understand the working of the Holy Spirit will be able to understand what I'm saying. I was in the bathroom one day. And the Holy Spirit said, I'm going to give you some supernatural power. And I just turned around because I'm like, okay, where's this coming from?
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I knew that it was the Lord speaking to me. And days later, maybe even a week later, after he had been gone from home for an extended period of time, he showed up and we were standing in the kitchen and I could tell by the look in his eyes. Every victim knows by the look in their abuser's eyes when there's about to be some type of assault or an attack, whether it's verbally or physically. And I saw that look in his eyes and he wanted me to sit down, but I wouldn't sit down. I said, if he's going to hit me, he's going to hit me standing up.
Right.
And I'm going to defend myself. Yeah. And he started demeaning me in such a way that my eyes welled up with tears. And the Lord said, don't you let a tear fall from your eye. And I just stretched my eyes and the tears didn't fall from my eyes. He swung at me. And all I know is that we were on the floor. And when the police showed up, I was about to be arrested. So you get that picture.
Not today, buddy.
Right. And that was the beginning of a slow end. That was the beginning of a slow end. That was when I was beginning to get my power back,
right,
and beginning to start speaking back up for myself, because I had entered into a place of just allowing a lot more and accepting a lot more of a lot more than what I would have in the beginning. And so it took some loved ones getting involved to some degree. And it took me just standing on my two feet and understanding that I could do this and taking courage and being able to do it.
It takes a lot of courage.
It does. It
takes a lot of courage. How many times you think before you got to that, you know what, this is the breaking point, enough is enough. How many times you think that you kicked him out and he came back and you guys tried to work it out? Can you even count it on two hands?
For me, I kicked him out one time and I let him come back. And he wasn't back 48 hours before I knew that I had made a mistake. And so we never entered into that place again.
Right.
But for most, you know, a victim will leave 7 to 9 times before being done. The unfortunate thing is that in those situations, oftentimes a victim doesn't live through it.
Right.
Yeah.
Because for every time that happens, that level of violence or it increases and or what we refer to as the lethality of it.
Right.
You know, it becomes so high and that the violence is usually reaches a point where a life is lost or nearly lost. Right.
So which one came first? Him demeaning you, trying to bring you down emotionally, or the hitting? Because I always felt like if someone is just calling you out your name, treating you a certain type of way, it's probably going to escalate to that. Like they trying you out, seeing how far they
testing
can get.
Testing the water.
You know?
Yes.
Is that a true?
That is true. In my case, he was very manipulative and very charming in the beginning. And that's one thing about abusers. They have this Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde mentality. And so he was very charming and, you know, very attentive, that kind of an individual. Controlling. And sometimes women and young girls mistake someone for being attentive when what they're really doing is being manipulative and working on being controlling. How you doing? Where you go today? What you do? You had company today. How'd everything go? They are working up on something that looks like something for me that I never had.
Right.
And it looks like a unusual level of concern in a good way. But in fact, it's an unusual level of concern in a very negative way.
Right. Very true.
And that was the way that he was.
Oh, man, that's so true.
That's interesting.
Yeah, because I was going to ask you, where's the thin line between someone being normal jealous about something or someone that's just like controlling, trying to control you? Like, how can someone tell that thin line?
Well, I'll say this. I think initially that you know yourself and you should know that within yourself. And sometimes we don't trust our gut enough.
Ah,
we don't trust that enough. Because for me, I thought about it, but I dismissed it. And what I should have done was filed it, but I dismissed it.
Right.
And so to answer your question in a more pointed way, I would say to the point that it makes you uncomfortable.
So you get that little inclination that, okay, this is a little uncomfortable.
Yes.
Like, why are you going so far with this?
And you should be able to say, you know what?
Right.
I don't like the fact that you keep asking me who came over every time you come by a call.
Absolutely.
So we can't do that.
Yeah.
And so I had a mother, I'm going to say her name, Mother Addie Marie Webster. She told me when I was young, she said, baby, when you get married, I want you to start out like you can hold out.
What that mean?
And she explained to me what she meant. You know, don't start doing something in a marriage or relationship that you don't plan on continuing.
Right.
Because some people are such a way that if you stop doing something you started doing on a regular, they perceive that something negative has gone wrong.
Yeah.
Not just that you just don't want to do that or you don't see the need for doing that, but something greater has to be wrong. And it creates such conflict in a relationship. So if you don't want something done to you in a relationship, it doesn't matter who it is.
Right.
Then you need to nip that in the bud early.
Right. Absolutely.
And there's a way that, you know, to address that respectfully.
Yeah. And if a woman or a man feel like they can't come out and tell their partner that they're with, that something is making them uncomfortable, that's probably not the person you should be with.
That is exactly right.
You know what I mean?
That is exactly right.
You should be able to communicate anything you have on your mind without issues.
That is
anything.
True. I agree with that.
Anything, for real.
So
going back, we're going to go back and come to that same point. Because I know you were, when you were growing up, you had a single mother. So you maybe didn't have a relationship with your father or a father figure as much. Do you think that had any type of impact in knowing what to accept or not accept with your husband at that time?
Yes. And I can add a couple of things to that. One is I had never met my father, not truly.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother was also a victim of domestic abuse.
Oh, wow. Did you see that growing up? Like,
I didn't see it physically, but I saw the results of my mother being abused. And it was very common, unfortunately, in the neighborhood where people had that kind of interaction going on. You know, you may see the boyfriend over, he and the wife or the girlfriend get into an altercation and he leaves. And then a week or two later, or a couple of days later, he's back and they're both behaving as though nothing ever occurred. And so, what I would say is I did have an uncle who, helped me in my growing up in different areas. However, seeing that male, with a woman, in a positive and healthy way, I can't say I really saw that. I saw it in a very minimal way and at a very young age, but not in my teenage years, not in my formative years. I'll put it that way.
Right.
And so I didn't have a sense of what that really looked like. Right. And I think the truth is, if you don't know what something is supposed to be, then you don't know that it's wrong when it is.
Right.
Yeah. How could you?
How could you?
You don't know what to look out for.
Yeah.
Exactly. And for me, I believed people when they said something. I was identified as being gullible. Mm-hmm. So if you told me something, I believed you because right. had no reason not to.
Right.
Well, I'm going to just not believe you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And makes so,
yeah.
Yeah.
Totally get it. So, you know, kind of from that question, how we're not, it's not the same, but that was one marriage. And now you're married to Mr. Edwards. How much from that past relationship maybe came into this one, and what type of man did he have to be to help support you and be there for you?
Ooh, that's a big question. That's a big ask. I can answer it, but I just felt that worthy of saying.
Mm-hmm.
I brought a lot into the marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And I brought a lot more into it than I realized that I did.
Wow.
And I think that happens a lot more than what people probably realize, mm-hmm. meaning the survivor, not right. the victim, but the survivor. Mm-hmm. And I say that because I'll give you an example. My husband is he has a very deep voice and he talks loud.
Mm-hmm.
He's almost incapable, as you know, of whispering. If he whispers, it's not a whisper. Just brace yourself because
right.
most people in the room are gonna hear him because he can't whisper. He
can't whisper.
And so in his talking loud, it would rattle me inside.
Mm.
And he didn't understand what was going on. I didn't articulate it early on. I was just being stifled by it.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I was being scarred by it further, but he didn't have any idea what right. was going on. And he would often say to me in different situations, I'm not the enemy. I'm not the enemy.
Right.
And what made me realize how much I had brought into the marriage is when I started writing Bound to Be Free. Mm-hmm. And I realized in the process of writing that I wasn't as healed as I thought I was.
Right.
I was teaching. You know, at church, I was preaching, mm-hmm. I was pastoring,
mm-hmm.
I was doing community work. I was doing a lot of things.
Right.
And I realized that I still had a lot of brokenness.
Wow.
And it wasn't until, or let me say, it was because of me writing the book, by the grace of God,
mm-hmm.
that I actually came to a place that I could say that I'm healed.
Wow.
That was the rest of my emptying out.
Absolutely. Right. Yeah, it was needed.
And it was absolutely needed.
Wow. That's a lot to unpack right there.
Yeah.
Now, let me ask you this. Did a situation ever occur where your former abuser tried to come around with your current husband? Like, have they been in the same vicinity and, you know, escalation occurred?
No, not at all.
Okay.
So let me qualify something.
Okay.
My ex-husband,
mm-hmm.
the abuser,
mm-hmm.
is the father of my youngest son.
Mm. Oh, okay.
But he has never tried to attempt anything on that wise.
Okay.
Because he's the wiser.
Right. Got you.
For many reasons.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, given that background, what type of advice would you give someone that's going through domestic violence right now and just feels stuck?
I would say that most of us as survivors have all felt stuck at some point. It just means that you need to put yourself in a position of not feeling shame to the point that you can't reach out to someone, because there is always help. You are not alone. There are so many of us out here that have had a similar experience than what you're having right now. And at any point that you decide that you are ready for help, there's the National Domestic Violence Hotline. There's a North Carolina Coalition Against Domestic Violence. There's a Family Justice Center right here in Guilford County, Greensboro, and High Point. And I say to you, reach out to one of those agencies for the help that you need. I also would encourage a person not to just up and leave.
Mm.
You want to always have a safety plan. And what that means is you want to plan out how you're going to leave. You want to make sure that you have certain things in place before you leave. You want to have certain records, certain documents, and you want to have a safe place to go to. Not a friend, not a family member, but you want to have a safe place to go to that the abuser is completely unaware of.
Right.
That is what I would say.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And that it takes courage to leave.
It does.
It takes courage.
Yeah, because a lot of times people just say, why didn't you leave? Like, it's just so simple. It's not that simple.
It is
just
not. Leave. It's not. Can I say something about that?
Please.
A lot of times abusers would threaten to kill or to harm the victim's children, the victim's parents, the victim, other family members or coworkers or right. people at church. So there are a lot of reasons why a victim don't just leave. So the next time you think about saying that to someone, just consider that it could be any or all of those reasons why they don't leave. And sometimes they don't leave because they don't have a means to take care of themselves.
Right.
You so know, true. If you the bread, if the man is the breadwinner, or if it's a man being abused and the woman is the breadwinner, they got to figure out how they're going to take care of themselves and children if there are children involved.
Right. Yeah.
And very if true. They don't have their own health insurance and they have illnesses, you know, how is that going to be addressed?
Right. Right. So true.
So there are so many different things that have to be considered.
Yeah. And a lot of people say, girl or dude, in no way that will happen to me. Did you feel like that would never happen to you prior to it happening?
Let me say, I never entertained it. Mm-hmm. I never had the thought
right.
of it happening. I never said it's not going to happen to me. Mm-hmm. I never thought about it happening to me, if right. that makes sense to you.
Yep.
I never considered that it could happen to me.
Yeah, it's furthest thing from your mind.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Like, why would we think about that?
Yes.
Like,
no,
you wouldn't expect that.
Even though it happened in my family, you know, I had right. a cousin who was murdered as a result of domestic violence.
Wow.
But I never thought about it being me as, you know, a victim
Absolutely.
At any point.
So when you talk about some of the men being abused as well, because I came to one of your events and a man was out there speaking about his survivorship.
Yes.
What ratio you think men that get abused in their relationship as well?
The truth is we don't really know.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say as it relates to that and as it relates even to the LGBT community, because it's so underreported.
Oh, wow.
You know, men don't report because, I mean, how you're men. So if you were experiencing that, how difficult would it be for you to say that as a man?
Extremely. When you talk about the shame word.
Yes.
That would be extremely shameful for a man to come out and say that I'm being abused at home or. I mean, I know men that get abused, but I don't think it's physical, but the woman
verbally.
Ooh, oh, my God. Yeah. You know, and that's domestic abuse.
Yes, it is.
You know,
yes, it is.
Because something that can tear you up on, you know, emotionally on the inside could be just as worse as physical, you know, and stick with you longer than abuse. Abuse. How you say that? Abuse.
Abused.
Abuse.
A bruise. That's what I meant to say.
A bruise.
A bruise. Like a mental abuse can stick with you longer than a bruise.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And I do hear people say that. I think I don't think one is any weightier than the other,
right.
as I've experienced them both.
Right.
And I say that because even though the bruise goes away, it still leaves an indelible mark in your mind.
Yeah. Oh, so one impacts the other still.
And what happens when it leaves a scar that never goes away?
Right, right. Yeah.
So I think that any physical abuse has come and brought emotional and mental abuse along with it.
Absolutely. It's a package deal, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So how can people get information about like your nonprofit Celebration of Survivors if they, you know, want to reach out or anything like that?
Okay, so Celebration of Survivors is an annual event that we have yearly. The ministry itself is called Mom Ministries, and you can find us at mom-ministries.com. You can also find us on Facebook at Mom Ministries.
Oh, wow. Awesome.
Okay.
I definitely include all that information as well as now with your art. You got some great art going on. Like, if you guys haven't noticed, we got this wonderful piece over here.
some abstract art. And what do you call it? What's the type?
It is called pour painting. P-O-U-R painting. Now, some people refer to it as paint pouring.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Oh, wow. So, and I see the design on the vase as well.
Yes.
It's just very nice.
Thank you so much.
And I saw some images on the art wall. You had so many. I don't know how many that was. Maybe like 30 to 45 images on that big wall.
It was a lot.
And it looks great.
Thank you so much.
And if anyone that can, support or, want to purchase such art, how can they do that as well?
They can also find me on Facebook at Author Marva J. Edwards, author as in a writer, Marva J. Edwards. And you can inbox me and let me know what colors you like or what have you. And we can have some dialogue. And if I can commission a piece for you, I'm happy to do so.
Awesome. Cool. Awesome. So how do you get into this whole art thing?
Well, I do a lot of work with survivors, and I wanted to be able to provide a means for them to be able to express themselves outside of just having to always have verbal dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to be done through a paint medium. And I had a conversation with another young lady that I met who's actually in our calendar, and she began to show me how to start pouring. And after we had a hour or two session together, I decided I wanted to do some homework on my own. And I did a lot of research and reading and things of that nature and start doing the paint pouring. And so now I will be utilizing this as a way to help the clients that I work with. And this will be called Art as Therapy.
Art as Therapy. Yes. I like that.
Yes.
And how long have you been doing this?
Toby, I always hesitate when people ask me that question, but almost 6 months.
Oh, wow. You're pretty good, though. I'm looking at it.
Almost 6 months.
I was going to guess about 12 years, something like that.
Thank you. Like you were saying earlier, calling.
Thank
you. Yes, yeah. There's something we refer to in the body of Christ as a suddenly.
Mm-hmm.
And this is my suddenly.
This is this,
you know, I feel like the Lord just poured this on me suddenly. And that is the only reason why I can do a good job in such a short period of time.
Poured it on you so you can pour it up there.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure.
Really, really good.
And then to be able to, you know, pour into other people.
Absolutely. And that's what you're doing with the, the support groups.
Yes.
While they're doing that, all those things are therapeutic, and nonverbal expression is just as important as, verbal.
That is exactly right. And just before I came here today, I had the pleasure of, so I'm contracted with the Kellen Foundation. I've been connected with them for over 10 years now, and it's a mental health type agency here in Greensboro that provides services for those who have experienced trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And we have been talking about having an art room, art as therapy or art therapy room. It will serve both.
Right.
And I just came from working with some volunteers to get that room set up. So I will be having art as therapy with my clients in that space as well.
Okay. Awesome.
So for any of you who need a support group as a survivor, please look up Kellen, K-E-L-L-I-N Foundation here in Greensboro.
Absolutely. And a lot of things that I see programs that help people that are in domestic situations, but what are we doing after? Because yours is the only one I can really think of that's about the survivors. Because also, like, that's an ongoing thing, you know, because just like you said, you even brought some of that in your next marriage from years ago. So support should be for, survivors, people that's going through it as well. And I just think that's so important. But because just when someone leaves a situation, that don't just mean it's over.
That's right.
You know, we got to know how to cope with and continue surviving.
That is true. And I will say there are not a lot of agencies or organizations, if you will, mm-hmm. that provide a lot of aftercare type thing. And really, this is one of the reasons why I started Inspire. Mm. And so I've been doing Inspire as a support group now for about 7 years.
Is that what we do the walks for? Is that Inspire?
So, no, the walks is just for creating awareness or heightening awareness okay. in the community as it relates to domestic abuse. That's our 5K walk run that Matt is talking about. Mm. But yeah, I've been doing a support group for 7 years, and I started because when I came out of the marriage I was in, mm-hmm. nobody said to me, you know, you need this. You should right. go to counseling. You should get therapy. You should do any of the above. Mm-hmm. And then I later realized that I would have benefit from having a group of people that I could sit down with and talk about what I was experiencing. And also realize that some of what I was experiencing mm-hmm. was normal. It right. was to be expected. But then what do I do with it?
Right.
And so all of the things that I was dealing with made it important for me to offer to others what I did not have made available to me during Absolutely. That time.
Absolutely. Have you ever, as you were talking, this idea came to my head. You maybe already thought of it before. It might be already out there in this world, but have you thought of like giving people something tangible for each anniversary of them being a survivor of domestic violence? Kind of like how the alcoholics get the chip. You ever thought about having a domestic violence chip each year? You
know, no, I years, never thought about of- that. The only thing I thought about that came close to that is that 1 year I had some medallions made. Mm. And it was for some of the survivors who was at one of our events. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, I never got a chance to give them to them because of miscommunication with the company. But that is as close as I came to oh, wow. to doing that.
Yeah, I think that would be nice. Yeah. I think it'd be nice.
Something to think about.
Yeah, I think that would be nice. And something going back as well. What is something you maybe tell your former self, like as the woman you are now, to that woman that was going through it? What type of advice would you whisper in your own ear?
I would say, don't be afraid. Mm. Don't be afraid.
Absolutely.
Don't be afraid.
Yeah, that's big.
Yeah.
Now to build on that, because I know when you're going through that situation, you're in survival mode mm-hmm. and you may not engage and talk to your kids about this situation. Anything that you may would say to your kids from the woman you are now to then, like take that place and whisper something in their ear. Anything you may would say?
Well, I would say a lot to my kids. Mm-hmm. And it's like you're making my mind just like real. So yeah. What is the one thing?
It don't have to be one. You can like anything you can think of that you may would feel like you didn't feel like you had the voice or didn't know how to articulate it then to try to help them as well get through it. Because mm-hmm. like you said, kids they know more than what we give them credit for.
Yes.
So, you know, we know that in hindsight, but you know, if we could go back, so maybe someone else listening is going through it now, they might be able to take that same thing you're feeling and do it for their kid.
And, you know, I would say to them too, don't be afraid. Because kids are afraid in yes. those situations. Even though nothing is physically happening to them, mm-hmm. something is happening to them.
Yes.
And I would also say saying don't be afraid mm-hmm. has more than one layer. It applies to more than one thing. Don't be afraid to use your voice. Mm. Because a lot of times with kids, mm. when you have people who are manipulators and who are intimidators.
Right.
And it doesn't matter whether they're the kid's age or whether they're adults or who they are. Mm-hmm. A lot of times they can say things and do things that make a child feel like they don't have a voice.
Right.
And so that is a part of where my don't be afraid applies. Don't be afraid to speak. Don't be afraid to speak your truth.
Right.
Right.
That's so important.
And don't be afraid to be true to yourself.
Yes. Yes. Because deep down, if you're going through it, you know you feel like you don't deserve that. But mm-hmm. some reason you'll just keep taking it.
Yes.
And that type of abuse can go for so many different things. Like with kids, saying don't be afraid to have a voice. Like a lot of kids that are in other situations when it comes to like, I don't know, like molestation.
That's right.
They feel like they don't have a voice because that manipulator, that master manipulator scripts their voice away. Make them feel
exactly
like
right.
no one is going to believe you. Mm-hmm. So you don't have a voice. So you having that message of saying don't be afraid to have a voice is so powerful because it does have so many layers to it.
It does. And, you know, and that is one of the reasons why as clergy, I'll say, mm-hmm. as people in the medical world, mm-hmm. people in the educational system, mm-hmm. and just community people in general, law mm-hmm. enforcement, first responders, why it's so important, and just grassroots people, it's so important for us to be people of integrity,
right,
and be people that can be trusted, mm-hmm. and trusted with the truth and in how you handle the truth that you learn.
Absolutely.
And that's a whole nother story as well. And I say that because children need to know that they have someone that they can trust.
Right.
When things are not going well.
Right.
You could be that very person that hear the truth mm-hmm. and save a life.
Yes. Yes.
Now, what would you say to a person that has been reached out to and don't know what to do with the information that may be unfamiliar with it totally? You know what I'm saying? They don't know who they should go to, being that this person came to them.
Are you saying that a victim comes to you?
Mm-hmm, like somebody came to me and I'm just like befuddled. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I don't know what to do with this information. What would you say to a person like that? Maybe.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, when I was in my situation, there was nothing called Google.
Right.
And now there's so much available mm-hmm. on the internet. You know, a person can even Google a safety plan for a domestic violence victim, and it comes up and tell you exactly what you need to do mm-hmm. and how you need to do it.
Right.
And that is what I would say, because it's going to be situational. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Every person's going to be dealing with something a little bit different. Children, no children, you right. know. He lives in the house, but he's not home, or he doesn't live in the house, but he comes every day, or that kind of thing.
Right.
So yeah.
That happened to me, though.
I was going to say that happened to me like some years ago. Mm-hmm. Like I knew a female and, you know, she was getting abused or whatever. I put in a hotel for about 2 weeks mm-hmm. so she could try to, you know, figure something out. But I didn't know what else to do besides that.
Well, I think you did a wonderful thing in doing that. And the reason why I say that is because one thing about being a victim is that you are not used to having your voice. You're not used to being able to think for yourself. Most mm-hmm. of the time, it has become so unmanageable and volatile that you are doing what you're being told to do, or you are doing what is necessary mm-hmm. to try to keep peace mm-hmm. so that there's one less fight, one less argument.
Right.
And that means not caring for yourself properly, because you're trying to keep the situation at bay.
Absolutely.
And so I'm saying that to say this: you gave that individual an opportunity to have some space to clear their head and mm-hmm. to begin to start trying to think again for themselves and put things in perspective.
Right.
And figure out, okay, now what do I need to do?
Yep. Yep.
And just to be able to rest.
Yeah. That's so big. Because like you were saying, like a man in a certain situation, like he make a woman feel like he's the brains behind everything. So she get an opportunity where she can exercise and start thinking for herself. That can be extremely powerful.
Yes.
Yeah. When I was managing at my job, a young lady came out to me and told me about some domestic issues she was experiencing. I referred her to Miss Marva.
Yes.
Yeah, that was a few years ago, because, you know, it was an interesting situation. And sometimes they'll go out there and talk a little bit and then go back in their, you know, shell. But, you know, just that once them reaching out, that means they're in the process of trying to, you know, figure something out. And that's good. Right. So still, just if someone comes to you and they go back to that same situation, don't cut them off. Just still remain open to try to, you know, support them in any way you can, because they may go back.
That is so true.
They may go back. Just be there when they're trying to really move forward, you know.
That is so true. That's so important that you said that, Matt, because a lot of times people become frustrated with the victim
mm-hmm.
because, you know, she crazy, he crazy. I don't know what's wrong with them. Why they don't leave, and right. they dumb. They're this. Just a lot more abusive language.
Yeah. Right.
It's basically what it is. And you know, one thing is for sure is that an abuser relies on loved ones abandoning the victim, because then it just gives them more access and more freedom.
Right.
Without worrying about that support from that person's loved one.
Right.
So it's almost like they're free of consequences.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, and they are master manipulators. Soon as, because that woman gonna come in, or man gonna go tell their partner what their family member said to them, and they can be like, "I told you, you know, you only can depend on me. You know, don't nobody else there want you, including your family." So you know, you got a family, and sometimes, you know, you get frustrated. You add additional abuse on top of the abuse that they already experiencing. Girl, don't be dumb, girl. Like, I'm trying to tell you, girl, you stupid to stay in that situation. That's abuse. Now you verbally abusing.
That is exactly right. And the other thing is that, you know, the last thing that a victim needs is somebody trying to tell them what to do. Mm. It's one thing to offer advice, but the most important thing you can do is ask them, what do you need? Mm. How can I help you? Instead of saying, well, you need to leave and you need to go here and you need that has been their life.
That's so true.
And so when you do that, you're just adding to what they've been living and they're trying and need to get away from.
Right.
But when you say, what do you need? How can I help you?
Right.
They may just say, I just need to lay down and go to sleep.
Right. Mm. Give that to them. Help them.
You know, so ask them what they need. And when you beg of that question of them, then what you are doing is creating an environment, an atmosphere by which they can start thinking for themselves. What do I need? What do I want? Because I haven't had the privilege of living in that space. So right. Now I got to think about it.
Yeah.
Because I've been letting somebody else process that for me.
Yes. Powerful. Very true.
Give them some of the control back.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
So true. Everything. We don't have to get a part two to get into so many layers to it. And I know you still have, events and things going on. We're going to. Yes. Deep dive into even more, and we appreciate you coming to our show and just bringing so much insight to these type of things, because I think it's so important. And you guys comment, let us know if you have any questions. We'll be sure to Ms. Marva gets those questions. If you're going through something, let us know about what you went through. Comment about how you survived, and any access to anything in your area that maybe that you're going through that could be a support for someone in your area, that wherever you're watching it from. Because when others watch this, they may be looking for that type of information. So, please engage with us, and we'll be sure to bring light to it as well.
Exactly. Man.
So, anything else you want to end with before we wrap up the show?
I just want to say to my sister survivors, you can do this. You can do this. Don't be afraid to get the help that you need.
Absolutely.
And you are not alone.
Not alone. So until next time, you guys hold it down. Don't let it hold you. Peace.
Okay.
The Highest Point Podcast.
More than a pod, it's a lifestyle.